Our next presenter is Timothy Mackey, who is a senior research associate at the Institute of Health Law Studies, California Western School of Law, and a PhD student in the Joint Doctoral Program in Global Health at the University of California, San Diego, and San Diego State University. And he graduated from Joint Master's Degree Program in Health Law at USCD School of Medicine and California Western School of Law. Timothy.
Hi, good morning. I just want to take the time to discuss this particular health and policy trade issue, and we're going to be discussing learning lessons from the SARS and H1N1 outbreaks, and how we'll also be assessing the effectiveness of the revised international health regulations that came into place in 2007. As a disclosure matter, I have no relationships to disclose associated with this manuscript. And just to go over the general scope of what we're going to be talking about today, we're going to be talking about the impact of travel and trade on global health and the globalization of diseases. Then we'll go to the first crisis, which was the SARS outbreak. And this, it's important to frame this particular case study as it was prior to the revised international health regulations of 2005. Then we'll go to the H1N1A. We'll talk about, of course, the response, which was the IHR 2005 revised health regulation framework. We'll talk about lessons learned and potential policy solutions to address current weaknesses and potential gaps in the existing system. So to begin, the World Tourist Organization, which I didn't know was a UN specialized agency, but it is, estimates that approximately 1 billion people are going to set to travel to international destinations in 2011. It'll be the first time that international travel hits 1 billion, and I think it's a very good example of the fact that even though we're in a global economic recession, people are still traveling, and people are becoming increasingly vectors for diseases and transmitting them to all parts of the world really, really rapidly through international travel. 7% increase in 2010 and a 4-5% increase in 2011 is expected. So a good example of the impact of travel and trade on disease outbreaks is actually SARS. SARS occurred in 2002, originally identified in China and later contained in 2003, spread to approximately 37 countries, estimated about 8,000 people were impacted with about 800 deaths. That's based on WHO statistics. Had a case fatality ratio of around 14-15%, so pretty high. And of course, it was spread through globalization and exacerbated by the fact that China failed to report it immediately, due a lot to the fact that they were concerned economically that would impact their economy, their burgeoning economy. And this was a pre-IHR 2005 revision disease, so there weren't specific reporting requirements for China to report this to the international community. And I think they originally said it was civets, cats. I think it's actually bats, so they killed a lot of those civets for no reason, which is unfortunate. So, illustrating the global disease spread of this, we can take a look at one single index case. An infected physician who left Guangdong on 2003, he spent only one night, on the ninth floor of a hotel. That seeded outbreaks to other interregional travel, Hong Kong, Vietnam, and Singapore. And then those cases actually seeded out other outbreaks through disease transmission where Chinese travelers were a common occurrence, like Toronto. So, one guy, spread to interregional travel, and then global spread, and very quickly. Trade and economic impact of this particular disease was very severe. Countries which had close social and economic ties to China were specifically impacted. 41% decline estimated in East Asia tourism during 2003. $1.3 billion loss for China, $2 billion just for the province of Ontario, and an estimated macro impact of about $100 billion. Stats in number three are for tourist-related losses, so spillover economic effects are potentially higher. So just wanted to point that out. So what the international community did after this, because they recognized that the existing international health regulation framework wasn't really adequate to address these type of diseases. The existing system only covered traditional quarantinable diseases such as cholera, plague, and yellow fever, and really didn't address these sort of novel emerging infectious diseases. So what the revised IHR 2005 did was, and it was an act of you know, responding to SARS and actually getting the international health community together to do better disease surveillance and emergency response? Is it broadened the scope of reportable events to anything that the WHO considers a public health emergency of international concern, what we'll call a PHEIC? It also broadened the scope and authority of the WHO. It required development of specific surveillance systems, so capacity building within countries to report diseases. And most importantly, it had text in the document that says that health measures should not unduly interfere with international travel and trade, recognizing the impact that public health interventions can have on in economics and trade, which can be very detrimental to populations as well. So specifics to travel and trade include that the WHO can issue temporary recommendations for country response, like they did in the SARS outbreak, unprecedented travel advisories, which did impact the economics and the tourist trade in a lot of these countries. State-based public health interventions should minimize interference with international traffic and trade, again, recognizing the importance of economic factors in public health decisions. That states engaged in more restrictive measures must provide public health rationale and scientific evidence to support that, and the capacity building on borders where disease transmission occurs. So, IHR was adopted 2005, went into place in 2007, and 2 years later it's got its first big test with the first global pandemic, influenza, since the Spanish flu. So a huge test for the newly christened international health regulation system. It was a new and novel strain, a recombinant virus, global pandemic, so it was classified as a global pandemic because it spread to all these different WHO regions. Transmission was widespread. Of course, uncomplicated cases were common. High proportion of infection for individuals traveling from Mexico. And the important thing, the CFR is listed as less than 1%, but when the disease first came out, because there was a low reporting of non-fatal cases, the CFR actually looked higher. So people thought this was a much more serious disease. And again, illustrating the global spread. Originally identified in Mexico, though it potentially actually originated in the U.S., but anyway, it spread to different areas, Europe countries mostly at the beginning of the onset, and then had global spread after that. The trade and economic impact is probably the most interesting part of this particular disease outbreak, because it was a post-IHR 2005 regime where IHR was supposed to sort of, you know, address some of these trade and travel impacts and prevent countries from enacting public health responses that were very arbitrary. So what Mexico did was they instituted broad-based public health response, including social distancing, et cetera, and really shut down their economy to deal with the H1N1 virus. Very proactive response. Very different from China, because China failed to report at the beginning. And it suffered. $2.3 billion loss during the spring of 2009. And other countries issued travel and trade restrictions unilaterally, even though the WHO didn't recommend that. And most egregiously, 20 countries placed a meat ban on Mexico, Canada, and U.S., and specifically, you know, pork from Mexico. This picture here shows Egyptian officials culling some 20,000 pigs, so they slaughtered some 20,000 pigs. No scientific evidence to back that up. The World Health Organization and the World Health Animal Organization didn't support that meat was a source of disease transmission. And the people at PETA used this as an opportunity to advocate for vegetarians, saying that swine flu isn't a reason that meat kills. It's pretty interesting, I think, ad campaign, but unfortunately not really much scientific evidence to back that up. So what happened during the H1N1? First, increased requirements for PHEIC surveillance and reporting. Arguably good, because Mexico did report quickly, and IHR required them to report quickly. Whether they would have done that without the framework in place, we don't know. But they did report quickly. Mexico aggressively institutes mitigation strategies. They shut down their economy. Yet the gap is that travel and trade restrictions were still imposed by other countries. Most notably, China imposed travel restrictions against Mexico, which is kind of ironic because, you know, they failed to report during SARS. And then Mexico, of course, had a $2.3 billion loss in the spring of 2009. And another thing that's important is, even though Mexico reported quickly, still spread globally. So that's another question about how effective disease response can be if a disease considered to spread quickly. And the question also there is if the disease had mutated into a more virulent disease, like an avian flu, could have been much more catastrophic. So the timeline, I won't go through all of this, it's a lot of text. Basically, the International Health Regulation came into place in 1969, a SARS outbreak occurred, big economic impact, they revised the IHR to address those issues, H1N1 came along, and unfortunately, we see a repeating pattern in that Mexico still suffered very big economic losses and travel and trade restrictions. So the lessons we can learn here are that IHR was designed to address limitations of the SARS, and it has addressed some of those. Mexico acted proactively but still suffered from economic and trade sanctions not supported by scientific evidence, which is required under the IHR 2005. And it questions the incentives for reporting of PHEICs by host impacted countries. So if you're a country where you're highly dependent on commodity exports of an agricultural product, and you've seen what happened to Mexico in the last H1N1 outbreak, you might try to contain that disease outbreak locally as much as you can before reporting it. There may not be the correct incentives for you to report because of these fear of economic sanctions. And there are continuing threats that are in line with this issue. The growing threat of prion disease infections in the food supply, mad cow diseases, things like that, estimated 11 billion. There's increased disease surveillance showing that it's also present in venison meat, deers. So that could potentially be a food source. Conflict between WHO and Indonesia over virus sample sharing. So this has to do with the commercial value of infectious diseases and information, and that was largely addressed through the WHO pandemic influenza preparedness negotiation. And of course, the recent ban on vegetables from the EU. Apparently it was beets, but the Spanish cucumbers got the worst of it. So again, an example of trade and travel impacting health. So we have a policy solution that we think might work to address some of these limitations. First, we need to balance public health and economic and travel and trade restrictions during outbreaks. There is an interplay between the two issues, and we really have to consider what are the appropriate travel and trade restrictions for sovereign states because they want to protect their borders, they want to protect the fact that they don't want diseases transmitted, and we want to prevent the global spread of a disease, so we have to balance those two issues. It's really difficult. We need effective and immediate travel restrictions to prevent the global spread of the disease, and we need countries to feel comfortable to report these diseases with an appropriate forum to adjudicate these differences. So what we propose is a joint committee between the WTO and the WHO because they have respective expertise in this area. Currently, countries pretty much go to the WTO for a dispute settlement body. It's a long process. It can take a long time. And it doesn't really react very well to public health emergencies of international concern. And in fact, Mexico went to WTO and they didn't get the redress they wanted. They came out with a joint statement saying, no, it's not the meat, but didn't really help them with the fact that they had a lot of economic sanctions or economic impact on their economy. So the structure of this could look like a specific committee, a joint adjudication process for streamlined dispute settlement of review of PHEICs. And what we mean by streamlined is a lot faster than the current system, because public health emergencies pop up, trade restrictions are imposed quickly, and the dispute settlement body at the WTO is very slow. So if I was Mexico, I mean, I'm not expecting much redress from the dispute settlement body in a quick manner, and you really have to address those trade restrictions quickly, because they have a direct economic impact. A committee with WHO and WTO adjudicating these differences, because they do have respective expertise, I think WHO should be involved in public health emergency and trade-related issues. And I've been to the SPS committee. I was there this last summer, and there's some food and travel and trade issues arise in that forum, but it's very slow and it's very long, and you know, all countries have a say, and it may not be the most effectual method for dispute resolution. And, of course, we also think that these committees should be in constant evaluation of their systems and really support the basis for a scientific-based policy-making system where they continuously evaluate the potential benefits of reacting to public health emergencies of international concern. But in order to really make this make sense, we think that there should be requirements, and these requirements should strengthen the system that's already in place, the IHR 2005. That means that countries, in order to access this adjudication process, would need to report diseases within 24 hours, like the IHR requires, that they would adhere to WHO recommendations, including sample sharing, that they would countries that are going to enact travel and trade restrictions would provide that scientific rationale immediately at the beginning to access this adjudication process, and that even countries that were affected by economic impacts would also provide information of how bad those trade and travel restrictions will impact them. And of course, compliance with the surveillance reporting requirements under IHR, with consideration and flexibility for our least developing countries, because they don't have the capacity now, and they don't have the funding. There's nothing in the IHR actually allows for funding of these mandates. So they're unfunded mandates, and least developing countries need help to do disease surveillance so that we can all contribute to global health security. Exemptions for clear and present danger situations, a disease that's rampantly out of control. I think most of you probably seen it, saw a contagion, but that's a probably good, it's a good example of something that's kind of out of control, and those things would be expedited through this committee. And then also clear unilateral trade or travel restrictions that just aren't justified. I think the meat ban is an example of that. And the last slide I'm going to talk about is just how we address current weaknesses of the IHR framework and how our policy addresses some of those weaknesses. First, WHO authority and expertise is limited to public health issues. So whatever the WHO says or does, it doesn't have really much impact on travel and trade. SPS committee, WHO is an observer delegate. It's not a member because it's not a member state. So it has limited participation in these type of forums. So instead, they should partner with WTO to adjudicate these health issues, health and trade issues. And I think the WTO could use the help of WHO as well. Current WTO dispute settlement body is lengthy and slow. This would be an expedited dispute settlement process. It does not incentivize disease reporting due to possible economic fallout. At least with this system, countries would have a place to go to address their issues in a more expedited manner. It could support future dispute settlement of the same issue. And then, of course, the main takeaway here is, I think, that we had the H1N1 swine flu virus come. Mexico was severely impacted economically, and yet they took very progressive measures, very progressive public health measures in coordination and cooperation with the U.S. to really shut down that disease, but they weren't rewarded for their particular efforts, I don't think. They weren't properly incentivized. And I think for the next country that has a potential global pandemic, they're going to be a little hesitant to report that disease if they feel that it could have a really adverse economic impact and that they have no redress for that issue. So that's it, and thank you for this opportunity. Thanks.